the time you get to Parshas Vayakha Pekudu, everyone's well familiar with the Machlokas, the Rambam and Ramban about the Mishkan. Now the Rambam believes the Mishkan and Karbanos that were brought in the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash eventually are B'diavad, and according to the Ramban, Chas V'Shalom, there's no way they're B'diavad, they're really L'chadchila. I wanted to analyze each of these sheets a little bit deeper. I'll start off briefly with the Rambam. Essentially, the Rambam Shita is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a Mishkan, Karbanos, a Beis HaMikdash because we had a natural Yetzirah to do Avodah Zarah. So God said, do you want Avodah Zarah? Take a Mishkan. It's a kosher form of Avodah Zarah. It's basically Avodah Zarah with a Hechsher. But God gave a Hechsher, so it's okay. It's B'dievet, it's not what you want. The Men Mepharshim explain it was triggered by the sin of the Chet HaEgel, the Golden Calf, the Egel HaZahav, when the Jews showed that psychologically, emotionally, they needed something physical, something tangible. God said, here, take a Mishkan. That's, many suggest that's why Rashi switches the order. But even though Torah portrays the Tzivoy first, and Trumat Tzav, and nonetheless, Ketisa occurred first, and in fact, the Chet HaEgel occurred before the Tzivoy. I want to ask a simple question on the Rambam. So the Rambam believes, again, that the Mishkan is B'dievet, we need to complete something tangible, and just like all the Goyim around us, all the other nations of the world, they have a Avodah Zarah, they have some type of tangible, physical way of connecting to their Avodah Zarah, so too, we needed something as well, we at least felt we did, and if we wouldn't have, we would have done Avodah Zarah anyway, so God said, listen, if the emotional, social, international peer pressure is so great that you're going to do a Avodah Zarah, let me give you a kosher way of having a middleman. Let me give you a kosher way of having something tangible. And if I understand it correctly, because we had this emotional need, God gave us a Mishkan in order that we shouldn't act upon it, well, then why did God give us the emotional need in the first place? When God created us with an emotional need to want to do Avodah Zarah, then God gave us the Mishkan to kind of like prevent it. So I guess the question is a simple one. What was God thinking by giving us that original emotional need? And I'd like to suggest that emotional need is probably one of the greatest things we have. Not particularly for Avodah Zarah, but for a connection. The Chassidim talk about after Hashem takes Avraham outside and look up at the stars and look at the stars that are, you know, there are so many stars, you'll have so many children just like that. The Torah says, "Vayaminu b'Hashem v'asat tzedaka," that Avram had Amunah. And the Chassidim point out, what do you need Amunah for? He just saw God. He saw God, he heard God, he spoke to God. What do you need Emunah for? And they argue, even if you have 100% Yediya, Emunah is a deeper level. Emunah is a greater element. We have an emotional inside need, that yearning, a seeking, a wanting for meaning, a wanting for God. That's how the human being is wired. Every single person is wired with a desire to connect to deep truth, to connect to deep purpose, to connect to God. Emunah is when you focus that attention towards God, not intellectually that you understand He exists. Even if you understand intellectually He exists, as Avraham did by interacting, communicating, seeing, and talking to and hearing from God, nonetheless, Emunah is a different level of avodah. It's an emotional connection that your heart is crying out for God. It starts with, allow me to believe in you, allow me to accept you, allow me to connect you, allow me to go deeper. And that's Ve'aminu Bashem, that Avram had Emunah even afterwards, and that's the greater of the Madrigas. This inner pulling is on one hand very strong, on the other hand it's combated by an equilibrium and a strong, equally strong Yetzer Hara, just as much saying, hey, There are a lot of good questions out there. Maybe it's just an emotional thing. It's nothing to do with philosophical truth. So to that, the Chafetz Chaim writes, without faith, none of the answers make sense. So there's a lot of truth to that. The Mishnah writes in Pirkei Avos, Dam Ashatash Vlat, because according to the Beit Yonah, it means if a guy comes along and challenges you, you should be able to debate him and win all the arguments. But according to the Marah, Dam Ashatash Vlat, because doesn't mean an external person, means you have to curse on the inside. And part of this Yetzer Hara, that also is a Yetzer Tov, is a desire, a yearning, a seeking for purpose, for God. And if all the other nations of the world are doing avodah zarah, it's very easy to channel it, to focus, to follow in their footsteps. So much that God thought it may have been insurmountable to the point where he gave us a Mishnah. But the point is, man has this emotional, this inner yearning. And it's difficult to control, and God gives us a Mishkan to help us navigate it in the right direction. Help us use that desire to connect to allow the answers to make more sense, opposed to use the desire that wants the question to think the questions make more sense. The greatest geniuses of the world, some of them believe that all the proofs towards God include God, and some conclude that no, not true. How much do the proofs to God, the ontological arguments, the teleological arguments, all different arguments that people have, how much do they weigh in the answer as much as you want them to? And part of what the Rambam believes is God gave us the Mishkan to help ourselves navigate this deeper inner psychological, emotional need to help find God with him, and not anything but, not the Avodah Zarah. But I wanted to speak more about the Ramban who disagrees. The Ramban believes the Mishkan's ideal. The Ramban has two statements which at first glance seem to be a little bit puzzling. The Ramban believes the whole goal of Sefer Shmos is to lead to the Mishkan. It's a Sefer Galus v'Geula, where we initially begin as slaves. Galus, enslaved to Egyptian rulers, no freedom. And we progress forward, the book develops, the process developing towards Geula. And many ask in the Ramban, we don't make it to Eretz Yisrael. The Geula the Ramban's talking about is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashras HaShechina dwelling amongst us. And that's why the second half of Sefer Shemos is all about Hashem dwelling amongst us in the Mishkan. That the Mishkan is a place where God dwells amongst us and we live there. That's one of the Ramban's comments. Sounding, implying that the Mishkan is the zenith, it's the epitome, it's the greatest goal, it's the greatest religious experience, God dwelling amongst us. It's the climax, it's the conclusion of Sefer Shemos, we build towards it. And at the end of the Sefer, that's when we get the Mishkan. Yet the Ramban also writes that the Mishkan is to take the Har Sinai experience with you. At the end of Har Sinai, after this intensified interaction with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, unprecedented divine revelation, how is man supposed to move on past that? You just experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the deepest way that world history has seen. What am I supposed to do tomorrow morning? How do I translate that into a daily practice? And the Ramban writes, the answer is found in the Mishkan. The way you want to carry the Har Sinai experience with you, on Har Sinai, you interacted, you saw, you heard from, you connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you want to take that with you, the Mishkan does it. That's kind of God's house. Go visit him sometime. Come stop by. And the reason why these two statements don't kind of, I wouldn't say call it a steer, but don't necessarily work together first glance is the Mishkan the ideal or not? On one hand, it's the climax of Sefer Shemos. It's the greatest thing it's what we're working towards. And on the other hand, if it's just carrying the Har Sinai experience, so isn't it secondary to Har Sinai? Meaning if the Mishkan is just a way of translating Harsinai to a daily level, so Harsinai is really the greatest, and this is just the best we got. God's not going to do Harsinai every day, so he gave us kind of like a tier two miniature, you know, Hasharas HaShchinah dwelling amongst us daily, but it's not the same as Harsinai. No one thinks the Mishkan was as impressive as Harsinai. Harsinai was a once in a lifetime, maybe once in a world history event. So, is Harsinai the greatest, or is the Mishkan the greatest? I was a little bit troubled by that, Ramban. I'd like to suggest an answer based upon a psychological observation, sociological observation. What are the key ingredients for religious success after yeshiva? What are the key factors, the criteria to determine whether or not you'll still be learning a week and a half from now in Bein Hazmanim, 10 years from now, 20 years from now? I believe there are two crucial, critical, necessary components. There are two dimensions, like any good brisker. There's three dinim. One, excitement. Intellectual curiosity. The geschmack, so to speak. The fact that Tosfos' kasha still boggles the mind and his answer is fantastic. The fact that Ramban offers a different great answer and the conceptual difference between the two. Trying to understand a difficult passage in a Rambam or in a Ketzos or in a Rav Chaim, and just being mind-blown by the intellectual depth of Chochmas Hashem, the intellectual curiosity, the brilliance of the Chachmei HaMesorah and the Torah itself, on one hand, and on the other hand, a sense of responsibility. A sense of, whether I like it or not, I'm going to learn Torah tomorrow. What are the odds you not putting on tefillin tomorrow? Hopefully zero. Very small. Why? Because there's a certain sense of responsibility. What are the odds you going tomorrow into McDonald's and eating a cheeseburger? Very small. It's just not in your array of Yetzirah. It's so ingrained. It's so innate. It's so deeply implanted in you that you don't do stuff like that. So too Talmud Torah. Your kovei eat them so much that that's what it is. The Medrash talks about different liquids that Torah is compared to. Ein mayim ela Torah. Torah is like water. Torah is like milk. Because on one hand, it's the most basic sustenance we have. As a baby, milk gets you started, and you cannot live without water. On the other hand, it's compared to shemen, to yayin, much more elegant, much more sophisticated type of beverages. It's fancy, it's razzle-dazzle, it's exciting. Torah serves two dimensions. It's the air that we breathe, and it's what blows us away intellectually. I believe those are the two critical components necessary if you want to take learning with you and be learning 2 years, 5 years, 20 years, 30 years down the road. A sense of responsibility and a sense of excitement. And I'd like to suggest that HaKadosh Baruch Hu established these principles way, way, way back in Sefer Shemos. Har Sinai, that was a motivating, exciting, uplifting event. Har Sinai was the razzle-dazzle. Har Sinai was HaKadosh Baruch Hu being Megala himself in an unprecedented way, knocking your socks off, literally as you jump 2 miles back from hearing his voice, figuratively as well. But the responsibility, the concretizing it, the solidifying of it, the day in and day out, not the exciting once in a while experiential event, but the day in and day out, the mundane grind. That's the Mishkan. The Mishkan is supposed to capture an exciting event and translate it for you on a daily level. And what's really greater? Har Sinai was more inspiring. But the climax, the zenith, is the Mishkan. Inspiring event, you dance down to the Kotel, it's supposed to carry with you through the week. Yeshiva experience, whether it's a year or two or three or four or more, is supposed to cultivate enough emotional energy and excitement amongst you that it should translate into a lifetime, not of maintaining it, but of continuous growth. It's easier to come to Shacharis every day than it is twice a week, because it's built into what you do. That's what happens after a few weeks of Daf Yomi. That's the simcha of a siyum guys make when they're in the army. That even when I have mamish 6 minutes a day of my own free time, I'm learning during those 6 minutes. It's just who I am. It's the, what am I? Not going to breathe? Like the story of Akiva and the brachos with the fish and the foxes. And the fox says to the fish, why don't you come jump on land? Kihem chayenu v'orach yameinu. What am I going to do? I'm going to jump out of the water? Then for sure I'll die. This is what I am. Why am I saying this now? To start, as I said earlier on, you should pay more careful attention. Earlier on in the year also, it was critical to build a sense of stability, a sense of day in and day out, to concretize your religious growth and to concretize your learning. It's certainly true about Bein HaZmanim. It's certainly true about translating learning into Bein HaZmanim. And I don't think it's wise to take the same hours that you have in yeshiva, but I do think it's wise to have a realistic plan and stick with it. I do think it's wise to put yourself in a base medrash, whether it's this one because you're here, or the next base medrash, that wherever you go, you find your next home is the base medrash, because that's where you live, in addition to your home. But also, because success, kayetz man, and those of you who come back next year, is very much couched in whether or not you believe this, whether or not you have responsibility, whether or not you come back, whether it's here, whether it's university, whether it's in the summer sleepaway camp. It's the synthesis of finding events and things that inspire you, that motivate you, and translating them into daily life. There are things that motivate me. I try my best to make sure I'm motivated every once in a while. Otherwise, it becomes overly dry. I try my best not to only live motivated lives because, you know, then you end up drooping between one and the next. A bunch of Italian joking around these days. Everyone loves to get a sweatshirt to remember the event. A jumper in British. Everyone comes back from Poland, they get a jumper. You go to camp, this camp, Poland, a jumper, sweatshirt. You go to yeshiva over here, a jumper. Six girls go to the bathroom together. Sweatshirt says with their name on it, you know? What's this sweatshirt phenomenon? We're not all that cold. maybe the girls are. Girls are cold. Ever notice that? My father-in-law likes a joke. My father-in-law's like a Sparty guy. So he's like half Sparty, but he's like always hot, like some Sparty guys are. Most. And I remember, like, his in-laws were over the house, and, like, they're like older already, like, you know, it's like 90 degrees out, they're wearing sweaters. My father-in-law's joking, I was like, I can't wait to be your age, because you're always cold. All my life I've been hot. I just can't wait to be really old. They didn't take it the right way. What was I talking about? I think the sweatshirt phenomenon, my Tarragon pointed this out, is that people are looking to live from high to high, from, you know, knockout experience to knockout experience, and they find themselves almost depressed in between. And the way you avoid that is by living a consistent life of what you value. Everyone knows the famous medrash that the Ein Yaakov quotes in the Hakdama that no one ever saw except for the Ein Yaakov in the Hakdama, which is the most famous, the most important pasuk in Torah. The message of consistency. Consistency is the ideal. That's the climax, that's the mission. It's God consistently living in our lives. And Har Sinai might have been a greater sound and light show even than Epcot Center. I was very impressed with the Epcot Center sound and light show. I was thinking, wow, Har Sinai must have really done it when I was there. But it's not what makes, it's not the ultimate, it's not the ideal, it's not, it's an impressive, it's a means, but the end is translating the religious, motivating, inspiring experience into daily life. It's translating Shabbatons into Sunday mornings in yeshiva, into afternoons in yeshiva, late nights in yeshiva. It's translating a meaningful conversation over Friday night dinner about hashkafa or philosophy or Eretz Yisrael or whatever it is into hasmada, into davening with kavana properly. If you have a good davening at the Kotel one night and you translate that into the next morning when you don't feel like getting up for shacharis, or the next afternoon when you don't feel like davening properly. And those you plan on going out and inspiring and being involved in shlichus, teaching Torah and kiruv and chinuch and call it what you want, to inspire your talmidim and to help them translate into daily life. And we're supposed to act on inspiration. We're supposed to, when we get inspired, to think of something and to motivate us. There's a story that was told about a frum guy who owns a building. And I don't know if the story is true or not, but I imagine it is. Even if not, the point is true. And he has a building where he gives a 10% discount to people who live in his house in the building who are willing to keep Shabbos. Not that he wants to be able to keep Shabbos, you get a 10% discount off your rent. So a Russian guy moves in, has him keeping Shabbos until now, and says he's going to start keeping Shabbos. The businessman decides to double check, walks in Shabbos afternoon, one afternoon, unannounced, and the Russian guy lives in Israel, I guess. I'm not sure why, sitting there writing a letter with the television on, with a pen. The businessman says, "You know that Shabbos?" The guy says, "Yeah." "You know that it's usher to write on Shabbos?" The Russian guy says, "Yeah." "But you know you're supposed to be keeping Shabbos, otherwise you'd be, wouldn't be getting a discount." The Russian guy says, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, what's going on?" The Russian guy says, "I really thought I can do it." "You can do it." He goes, "No, I can't. But I'll tell you why I can't. When I was younger," I don't remember the details, I had this story when I was like, I don't know, 16, 17 years old, a long time ago. I don't remember exactly what the details were. But something happened with the Russian. He goes, "I believe in God, and I believe in God more than you do, and I'm into this." And at some point in time, communistic Russia was chasing us, and Jews, and this and that. And I don't remember the details, I don't remember them. But at some point in time, I dove into Hashem, and Hashem saved me, and I said to God, at that point in time, "I'm going to live a religious life, I'm going to start keeping Shabbos." I remember the first Shabbos I had planned for something, so I said, "I'll start a week from now." That's a great mistake to ever make. If my mistake was not translating into the first Shabbos. And once I started pushing off the first Shabbos, there I was, pushing off and pushing off and pushing off. I wake up, so if I miss Shabbos today, I'll start. Tomorrow's when I'm going to really buckle down and work on Shabbos. Tomorrow's when I'm really going to buckle down and work on late night Hasmad. Pushing off and pushing off and pushing off. You got to translate it. Yeshiva, on one hand, I feel a little bit silly giving this message with 2 days left in his mind. Translate, you know? Thursday night, the end of the week, why don't you just start translating first thing Sunday morning? Undermines everything I'm saying. What am I doing over here? The answer is you should start translating tonight, start translating tomorrow, continue translating tomorrow morning, start continue translating Shabbos, and over his mind. I'm sure if you heard him say, he likes to make the point, which is the most important amount of the year? Some say it's Elul, it's the beginning. Some say it's Chorf, it's the deepest, it's the longest. Some say it's Taitzman because it's the end. You know, the most important man is Bein Hazman. Classic of Behel Erchak, you know? You know him, you'd appreciate that. That's like his type of line. He appreciates a good something like that. Bein Hazman is a chance to carry out and live the life you've been dreaming of while living in an Ivy Tower. if yeshiva was this inspiring event in a certain sense, especially if you're Shana Aleph, it's like a really, really, really long Shabbaton. In a certain sense, it's not real. It's somewhat surreal. You're kind of living in a bubble, and your parents told you that, and you kind of don't believe them, but you kind of know it's a little bit true, because it makes sense that'd be true, and with everyone else it was true, but you know, I kind of, now I'm living it, so I kind of feel like it's kind of real life. Har Sinai was really, really inspiring, but it's the Mishkan is where you carry out your value system. And I guess, you know, to each person, on one hand it's a general message, on the other hand, to each person on their own. The general message is figure out the right way to carry it out. Each person, individual, figure out the right way to do it for yourself. To take the inspiration, to take the yeshiva experience, to take a chorus man like we had, to take the second shavuos like we learned, and to build it into us to help use it so we should continue growing. Wherever the next stage of life is, whether it's back in Chutz Laaretz, whether it's here in Eretz Yisrael for Bein Hazmanim, whether it's the army, whether it's Kaitzman, whether it's university, whether it's post-Pesach programs, no matter which place you do it at, to make sure that the inspirational moments you have lead to something tangible. Get translated. Inspirational moments don't build people. It's the day in and day out that builds you. And if you don't think I'm right, look back at this last year. Yes, down to the Kotel was probably great high. Hearing about Targum's Tishat, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Tzfat, whenever it was, great high. Probably something else really inspired you at some point in time. Probably you heard this thing, you saw that one, watching Rav Zemetzel cry, he looks at the Harabayas without a base of Mikdash. There are a lot of things here in the old city, in our yeshiva, that inspire you. But what builds you, what gets you to where you want to be, is the dry grind, the difficult, day in and day out, daily hard work. The greatest pasuk in the Torah, even greater than the Har Sinai, was the Mishkan. Even though the Mishkan, not shouldn't say even though, Dafka, because we're carrying that emotional, motivating experience with us. I wish everyone a lot of hatzlacha v'bein hazmanim to carry things with you. Shavachal kosher v'sameach. Get some rest. Learn a little bit. Most importantly, on one hand, come and refresh for a good harvest, for a good kites man. And also, most importantly, because this is what I'm talking about, translate what you did into the next stage of life. Shabbos.